It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, welcome back into another hour of fun on the radio. The hell was that?
Yeah, I mean, it's disingenuous.
What was that?
It was disingenuous and not really. It just wasn't believable.
You want to know what happened right there? I got tangled up. I'm waiting to introduce our man Joe Ostrowski, who's on the Wester Hotline, and I'm thinking I want to make a joke about here to break down all the election results with us is Joe Ostrowski. But I got tangled up. Do I want to do that? Should I do that? And I said, what did I say? Have fun? Fun? What? Joe, I'm telling you, this thing goes to hell when Mike's not here. It's tough. It's like I never even been here before.
No, I get it. Like that second before you're about to talk into the microphone, coming back from the break, you're trying to bring energy, say something, and
over the course of
3-4 hours, dumb things are going to
happen. That's what comes out anyway.
That's what happens.
I'm really sorry you were here for it. joining
us,
Joe Ostrowski is one of our BetQL daily gambling insiders here. Weekdays 9 to noon, BetMGM game day on Sundays 8 to 11 with Odyssey insider Jason Locke on 4 on the BetQL network via the Odyssey app and the Bet Buffalo. 1520 a.m. is where we're at. So how goes it, man?
Good, man. They gave us a good game tonight, I think, right?
I think so. A couple of these Thursday games have been really good. Like, we usually talk them down, but I feel like we've gotten that kind of shoved in our faces. Atlanta-Tampa, I think we were talking like that, and that turned into a barn burner. So we should get good. I mean, the short week is always tough, but what do you think here? We were just talking about, even from the Bills' perspective, would you rather get Cincinnati kind of get them out of the way? Because I'd much rather see the playoff pool contain teams like, I don't know, Denver or the Chargers or even Indianapolis than the Bengals. So I think I'm kind of rooting for the Ravens to knock the Bengals down here.
Yeah, from your perspective, certainly. You want to knock out as many really potentially scary quarterbacks in that playoff picture. For sure. And you guys are in the mix, and we'll talk about it with your game. And, of course, looking ahead to next week as well. You're the only threat to the one, right? I mean, when you look at what Kansas City has done and their road to go here, it's just them, and they're a big favorite right now, and it's the Bills, and then a massive drop-off. The third favorite is like 18-1 to catch Kansas City for that number one seed, as important as that is. So the line is still 6. We're sitting – it's a high total, man. Yep. 52.5 on a very short week. Much of that because of what we saw in week 5. That was that 41-38 shootout in overtime. But, you know, T. Higgins was a big factor in that game. So it doesn't look like he's going to be going – in this one, Orlando Brown for Cincinnati as well. Mentioned in the update there, Isaiah Likely not going. So these are some key players in this game. Burrow, when he's getting points, when he's getting more than a field goal, he is scary. He's a bet-on guy. 16-3 against the spread when he's an underdog of at least 3 points. So we know how these NFC North games go. They typically end up very close no matter what the matchup is. So I'm looking at the Cincinnati side. I'll admit I haven't been able to figure them out this year. When I'm expecting them to show up, they're a no-show. But the defense has been playing better over the last month. So I think they're going to make a game of it. I do like the Bengals there. And as far as, you know, props, boy, the Ravens, they're the only team in the NFL that's letting teams on average pass for over 300 yards per game. Only one. It's not even close. So you would expect Burrow to have another big game. His number is 268.5, and I would assume it's going to be all Chase Brown. The rushing attempts I saw was 15.5. They just traded for Herbert. Moss done for the year. He had 27 carries on Sunday. So I'd assume that he's going to get a lot of looks. And Jamar Chase is tempting, but that number keeps on going up every time I take a look.
What do you do? Does Jermaine Burton even
just
get numbers?
His over-under on receptions is 1.5. Feels like an easy under.
Right. Did you follow that last week, Joe? Like, he was going to be featured in their game, and then he just went AWOL, like, didn't show up to the walkthrough on Saturday. There's pictures of him alone at a casino. Like, it was really tough. This is a player that was, you know, very talented, but red flags all over the place for character issues, bounced around college football, but was still a third-round pick. And so I don't know. Like, they got to lean into him, I think, somewhat, because there's still no Higgins.
Burrow was also giving him the business on the sidelines. Like, he was sitting down and basically told him, like, get up, while they were up like three scores. Like, there's something going on there.
Jeez. And another one of their guys, Charlie Jones, is hurt. So they don't have any other options, I would think. And if you're the Ravens, we know they've had their issues. They're bottom five, maybe even worse than that, like at the very bottom as far as pass defense. It's all about Chase. It's all about containing Chase a little bit today. So, yeah, I would think that Burton is going to be forced into action. Another possibility, I didn't check on the numbers, is Gesicki's really turned it on over the last few weeks.
Yeah, big game last week for him, right? I think two touchdowns maybe even. I know I saw at least once. I saw the gritty. So I know that happened. Joe Ostrowski, one of the BetQL hosts on the West Hur Hotline with us here on WGR. Every week we talk about the MVP for at least a couple of minutes with both you and your co-host Sam, who will be with us tomorrow afternoon. And, you know, we've, I think, probably said this with you on the air. Like, Lamar's got his work cut out for him to get a third MVP. Like, the voters will hold the playoffs against him. Third MVP is like, you know, that's rare air in the league. Like, only the very best players of all time have gotten that. Joe, he's having that year. He's having the year that looks undeniably like the MVP year.
Better, right?
Right. Well, better than last year, yeah.
I see him as the co-favorite at a bunch of spots with, of course, Josh Allen. And it's funny, as the Chiefs keep winning games, Mahomes is starting to slide down finally. They just had him because he's Patrick Mahomes as a favorite for so long. I saw Sneaky Joe tweeted out earlier today just comparing last year's MVP season to what he's on pace for. I mean, the passing yards is 800-900 higher. The total touchdowns on pace for 12 more. 41 total touchdowns. It's crazy. I don't know if he could possibly keep up with it. But this is what it was going to take for Lamar Jackson to get into the shortlist conversation. But right now, it just seems like between Allen, Jackson, Mahomes, whichever guy has the the best game, let's make him the favorite. And these three names, it seems like they're going to be kind of sliding around until the very end.
All right, so that's tonight here. Or did we get to like what you really like tonight before we move off it?
Yeah, no, I'm good with Burrow. I think Chase Brown gets a lot of looks.
Right.
Zay Flowers is popular. I understand why. And I saw 59.5 receiving yards. He's had four 100-yard games in his last five. So I certainly understand it, but a little too popular for my liking. Like, I'm missing something. It's a primetime game. Everybody's going to be on it, and it feels like a lot of times those don't come through.
Right. We'll hop around the league in a minute, but how about the Bills game? What do you think? I see Bills minus four. The total's 47.5. It's week two with Joe Flacco. The lousiest output the Colts have had all year on offense in week one with Flacco, but they're going to roll with it and see here. What do you think?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they decided to already make the announcement that the plan is he's going to be the guy for the rest of the season after not entering the red zone on Sunday night. I know that's a tough matchup, but it's interesting. I think a lot of the public is taking a look at what they saw on Sunday night, and they're going Bills, and not saying it's right or wrong. Sam's one of them. He has a strong opinion on this game. I'm not there, but as far as like some gamblers I talk to, they're all on Indy. All of them. Mm. And I understand the line of thinking. The thinking is, okay, it's a buy-low spot on the Colts. And aside from Sunday night, Indy's covered just about every game. They have one of the best ATS records in the NFL. It is an upgrade, even though it didn't look like it on Sunday night, to Flacco. They play well at home. They think, okay, they'll stick with the run game. There is a connection with Josh Downs and Flacco, and this is the sell high spot. Sell high on Buffalo, buy low on Indy after Sunday night. And is there that possibility that the Bills are looking ahead to next week? Of course there is. So that's the thinking there with this this line of four. I'm not there. I'm not one of those people, but I've heard it from a good number of people. It's one of those public versus, you know, the sharper, better thing out there where The pros are taking the Colts, and the public is taking Buffalo, and the public has been crushing it over the last month.
Recognizing that everything is baked in here, how much do you think the pros who are on the Indy side are remembering the game 4 years, 3 years ago here in 21, November of 21, the Colts rolled in here, and Jonathan Taylor went off on them?
I think I've heard it brought up just about them running all over the Bills and just controlling the game and, you know, keeping it a one-score game, maybe it ends up being a field goal game. I've certainly heard that angle brought up with Taylor.
So what about the rest of the schedule? Is there anything you really like the rest of the weekend?
Yeah, sure. I hate laying a big number with a favorite, but I really like San Francisco in this spot. San Francisco going on the road to Tampa Bay, how deflating of a loss. Mm.
Tough.
Was that for Tampa Bay? Yeah, I mean, come on.
It's tough for us here too, Joe.
Yeah,
I mean, Tampa
could have.
Well,
just rooting interest.
Yes. Like the one seed is still in the window there, and if the Chiefs would have gotten dinged there, the Bills could pass them if everybody holds serve.
I'm giving up hope that they're going to lose. They might just go undefeated.
Yeah,
it's like they should be losing some of these games.
Yes.
They have 6 1-score wins now. I don't have any confidence that it's going to start to happen in the second half of the season. But that's a really tough spot. It's a short week. They're on the field. That defense for 83 plays goes to overtime, and head coach does not decide to go for the win. I don't get it. Put it to a coin toss, and we know the rest. But and on the other side, you've got San Francisco coming off a bye. It looks like CMC is going to be back. Debo, bunch of pieces on the road. It just feels like we're going to see that Niners team that we've been waiting to see all season long. So certainly like San Francisco, that's gotten up to, I think, 6. We were at 5 earlier on in the week. But do like that one. Look, I know it's tough, and maybe Jaden Daniels is just different, but you're giving me Pittsburgh +3, mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin, extra week to prepare. He's 25-6 straight up against rookie quarterbacks, and Jaden Daniels has played a lot of soft defenses. Not trying to take anything away, but this is going to be a tough spot for him. So getting 3 points, yeah, I do like the Steelers in that spot. Those were a couple that certainly stand out, mm-hmm. and it's that Dallas number. Mike, do they have anybody?
No.
It's 7.5 right now, Philadelphia. I missed it. Did they say Nico Collins is in today?
He wasn't practicing again today, so it seems unlikely, but I don't think that's been declared definitively either way. But he has not worked yet this week.
Yeah, the Lions are a 3.5-point favorite. They're back indoors. If it's not Nico Collins, I'm going to be tempted by Detroit. And I know there are a lot of people out there just taking the home underdog by 3.5. That offense is different without him. And C.J. Stroud, last time we saw him on Thursday, certainly he does not look like the same guy, taking bad sacks. And yeah, I would probably be on Detroit, even though that hook is a little bit scary.
Joe, I'm glad you brought up Pittsburgh, because that was kind of who I wanted to ask you about. And I don't know. When I think about the move that Tomlin made to Russell Wilson and how it was made, the conversations about how it was kind of a rogue decision and it was his and his alone, and now everyone's kind of celebrating it 2 weeks in. And it's not like it hasn't looked sexy. I mean, he still throws balls into the ground. I mean, like, it doesn't look that great, but it's working. Are you expecting that to be, I mean, everyone knows the schedule they've got coming up, but like, is that a team that like you're kind of thinking, man, they beat the Commanders this week, they've got some of these tough matchups, but they're healthy, TJ Watt's there, and their offense looks okay?
I'm somebody that was anti-Steelers before the year, so it's taken a while for me to come around on this. And we've gotten to the point that everybody was saying, okay, when that schedule gets tough. Now, this Washington game looks a lot tougher than we thought preseason. Things have also changed, too. They get Cleveland twice, okay? Before the year started, we thought that Cleveland game was going to be much more challenging. Cincinnati, we'll see. They've been very up and down, but yeah, your point is certainly valid, but they're so smart there. They're going to put him in a position where he's not going to kill them. And if he does, it wouldn't surprise me if they end up making another switch back to Fields for a game or so. But we know how they're going to play and how they're going to try to win these games. Yeah, I think they're obviously going to level off. They're not going to play to this 6-2 pace, but definitely have a lot more trust there with that defense. And they decided to add some pieces at the deadline, too.
Odyssey betting insider Joe Ostrowski on the Wester Hotline with us for just a couple of more minutes here on WGR. College football playoff. I know we'll get into this with Sam tomorrow. I know that's more his area of, speciality, whatever. but, you know, whole new thing. We saw the first bracket this week. And I wonder, like, how much different it is betting it this year with, you know, with a 12-team playoff out there. Like, there's got to be some juicy underdog action out there. Notre Dame is projected as in there. And, like,
I'm trying to get Nate going.
People love to just jump on Notre Dame. I feel like that can skew things. I don't know. Do you have any initial reads here early on how things will shake out with the playoff?
Just for the conversation, it is so much better than what we were dealing with in the past. Like, there are teams, well, first off, in the first round, we're going to get home games at some of these sites. So it's going to be, and when I say some of these sites, I'm talking your classic stadiums. Notre Dame could be hosting a game. It could be, you
will
know,
be.
Texas.
Will be hosting a game, Joe. Will be.
I might be there. I've been there a number of times. We'll see. I mean, how awesome would that be? First round of playoff, maybe it's Penn State.
Oh, I would, Joe. If it's Penn State,
yeah.
Oh my God, it's the can'ts and the have-nots against each other. Like, it's just the can'ts in what's his name, Franklin, ever winning a meaningful game, and the have-nots in Notre Dame. They just haven't beaten anybody worth a damn. So it is an immovable object versus another immovable object. We'll see who wins.
I know. Well, you know, it's funny that you asked this question, and we have the first reveal with this weekend, because there are some SEC teams that are going to be eliminated because they're going to get their third loss. There's LSU against Alabama. Both of them have two losses on the year. That's a 3-point spread. Alabama, the road favorite. The loser's out. You know, you get that third loss, you're going to be out of this top 12. At least that's the idea. We haven't seen this put together yet, but I think it's fascinating. And there are going to be some teams that are going to be a threat to go all the way that end up playing in that first weekend. So I think it's going to be a ton of fun. Betting opportunities to make the playoffs, to miss the playoffs, that was pretty obvious in the past. And we're going to see some teams, let's say, out of the SEC, out of the Big Ten, that are dangerous, that are not in the top four. Whichever team loses the Big Ten championship game, they're probably going to be the five. Right now, that's Ohio State. They're also the favorite to win the championship, even though right now they're projected to be the five seed. So I think it's going to be fascinating. Really looking forward to it.
I was looking at just the field to make the playoff earlier today, and you know, the odds vary wildly, of course, but there were 11 teams that were at minus money. The first plus money team was the 12th team on the board, and that was BYU. Everybody else minus, like Ohio State was like minus 3,500 or something, like just some bonkers number. But I thought that was kind of stunning that even though there's so much football still to be played, that there's 11 only, you know, there's 11 teams at minus money there.
Yeah, and doesn't mean they're right, because the one that I've got circled, and it's a great story, so I wouldn't love to see it, but to miss the playoff, Indiana's 2-1. And they were plugged in as the 9 seed in the 8-9 against Tennessee right now. So Indiana, 9-0, 3 games left. They've got Michigan this weekend. They're more than 2 touchdown favorites, so they should win that. The last game of the year is Purdue. They should just crush them.
Or don't. Yep.
Yes, but in the middle, they have to go to Columbus. If they get that one loss and they're not in the Big Ten championship game, I think the committee is going to keep them out.
It takes a lot for you to believe, I think, speaking for myself, it takes a lot for me to believe that Indiana is ever any good at football.
This is the first time ever.
And the Michael Penix year, right. And then like he transferred, and then that was it.
Right.
Their coach, he's a vibe. Did you see his quote?
No.
He said, they asked him basically, you know, hey, you know, why'd you? He goes, I don't know, if you see my record, where I go, we win. I was like, oh, I'm betting that guy. Yeah, I'll take that guy.
All right.
Man. Baller.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for this, man. Happy hunting this weekend, and we'll look forward to next Thursday's visit, man.
Thanks, guys.
That's our dude, Joe Ostrowski. BetQL Daily weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon, and BetMGM Game Day, Sundays, 8 to 11 a.m. with Odyssey insider Jason Lock on 4 on the BetQL network via the Odyssey app and the Bet 1520.
Do you want me to close out the segment? Like, you've been listening to the really fun show on sports here on WGR. Do you want me to, since it, I mean, it's how you opened it, so I didn't know if you were.
Take it to the break. Go on. Go.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
You've been listening to the really fun sports show with Chris the Bulldog Parker special guest Nate Geary.
Yeah, hard to say. He hasn't really practiced. You know what I mean? He's been, I think it was a week and a half or whatever, give or take. So as of last week, he practiced a little bit, and we'll see where it goes this week to give you an accurate read on where he is with the playbook. Right now, he's spending as much time in the training room as he is in the, you know, process of game planning and all that type of stuff. So it's hard for me to say accurately in this case.
That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about Amari Cooper. And that comment was brought to our attention on the show yesterday by a caller who had heard Mike a few weeks ago when the Cooper trade was made, you know, wondering McDermott sounded kind of not super excited about Cooper, like sort of played it down when first asked about it, you know, another guy to help out the group, that kind of thing. And, at that time I said to Mike, and we repeated some of this yesterday, like, I think that's just McDermott not wanting to make Curtis Samuel and Mac Hollins and everybody else, Khalil Shakir, feel less than, right? Like, if the head coach is, oh my God, thank God Amari Cooper's here, you know, the rest of the everybody eats crowd might feel a little bit like, oh man, our coach kind of, he seems a little too excited that there's somebody to replace one of us coming in. So I thought McDermott, you know, sensibly would try to slow play. I don't know that I'm right. Mike could be right. I don't know. But that was my take. So this caller yesterday brings that comment up about the training room. And I said to the guy at the time that called in with it, like, you know, if that's right, that sounds odd to me. Seems like an odd thing for a coach to say. And it turns out, indeed, the caller was accurate, and it is right. You just heard McDermott say it with your own ears if you're paying attention here. And I still think it's odd. I don't think it's a build a show around it type of topic, but I think it's interesting, Nate, when you hear a coach talk about a player like that, it's hard to say he's been spending as much time in the training room as he has been in meetings, you know, in game planning, so it's hard for me to say. I get that that certainly would be or could be factually accurate. It's an odd way for the coach to describe Amari Cooper's arrival here. It sounds like, hey, get out there a little bit to me.
Yeah,
and maybe it is. Maybe he's just speaking innocently and not, you know, just it's factual. He's injured. He's in the training room a lot. I don't know. It just sounded a little odd to me.
Definitely a little odd. You know, in fairness, I mean, since he's gotten here, he gets the injury in that Seahawks game.
Right.
But before that, I mean, he was on the field learning the playbook,
sure,
spending a lot of time at the facility. All we heard about was the assistant wide receivers coach.
Yeah.
At the facility night and day with Amari Cooper trying to onboard him. So
I wonder if there is some internal frustration about his injury, if whether like maybe McDermott or the trainers or the doctors or something, like, you know, he's fine, but he's over here going, I don't know, this hurts still, I can't catch the ball or whatever. So I feel like it's something I'm going to be paying attention now, more attention now, every time McDermott or any of the coaches are asked about Amari Cooper, because I just feel like it could be a sign. I hope it's not. Again, I hope it's just innocent and factual, but usually that, to me, feels or sounds like, hey, you know, we got a shot you can take. This is what that usually sounds like.
I maybe want to like extinguish the flame a little bit on
okay,
this.
Okay, good.
Only because if they thought this guy isn't a great fit right away, like, hey, we need you on the field, we think you should be playing and you're not, they would have made another move.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Even if it was just somebody.
Yeah, if they had time, certainly, to do it.
And if they were worried, like, he's going to miss extended time, we can't seem to get him out of the training room and out of the field,
we got to find somebody that can come in here. Mm-hmm. We can, like, even if it's...
I think that adds up.
You know, even if it's a board, fringe plus something, they would have made a move, I think. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I think that makes sense. I want to hope that that's right because, you know, again, I don't want to make this more than it is, but it just is a curiosity. I'll leave it there for now. 803-0550 is the number. The news today, and we'll get through a lot more of this with Sal coming up in about a half an hour when he joins us in the 5 o'clock hour, is that Cooper is still limited and has that wrist pretty heavily taped. Keon Coleman, just did some work on the side with trainers, but didn't appear to have any kind of a brace or wrap or anything on the injured hand/wrist that he suffered in the Miami game. So I don't know what to make of that. McDermott's wording about him when he addressed the media yesterday was curious in that said he's not ruled out for Sunday, but it is something that possibly could extend more than one game. So I'm not sure what to make of that. I feel like the testing and the everything else has probably been completed at this point, so they maybe have a good handle on where that is. Really, I'm going a long way to say tune in to Sal's Extra Point Show tomorrow morning when the coach joins him, because I have a feeling McDermott might have some information on all of these guys. What I feel really like the timing is so tough here. They've got an opponent here that you could be tempted to save guys for next week. I mean, Kansas City is next week.
Yep.
Indianapolis doesn't feel like a team that should, you know, if the Bills are somewhat on point, even without key guys, I feel like that's a game you should be able to go in there and win. I just wonder how that equation works, like how much they would view it that way, whether they think they can get by without, you know, both Coleman and Cooper. Man, I just feel like that's so tough. You know, we only had really like six quarters of them looking on point passing offense-wise, and then Cooper's out last week against Miami, and they got there last week. I mean, Josh Allen had a good day ultimately against Miami. But, boy, the specter of being down those two guys especially, that's really looming, because I feel like, you know, we got the first game out of Cooper where he scored and had a couple of other nice catches, very little, one catch against Seattle. He did get hurt. That's where this injury occurred. No action last week. He was scratched from the game against Miami. And now I'm watching DeAndre Hopkins catch two touchdowns for Kansas City. And I'm just like, oh, come on. We need our guy, right? Because they're passing offense without a number one. I feel like we learned through the first month or 6 weeks of the season that the everybody eats thing sounds great. But in practice, in practicality, you need to have a guy that can beat one-on-one coverage regularly. Like, otherwise, you're really going to struggle.
Or just not be able to consistently do what needs to be done to win games. You can get by a half of football, but it's very unlikely against good football teams you're going to be able to consistently drive in and drive out, do what's required to win football games. Unless you have just an unbelievably elite defense. The Bills don't. Bills have a good defense. They're designed the right way today's modern NFL, and they'll have their moments. Like, last year, the defense really struggled in the middle of part of the season, like really struggled. And then they turned it on towards the end, and then obviously the injuries happened and it fell apart. But like, there always is ebbs and flows to this Bills defense. There will be games, the Seahawks game. Now, it's probably a different game if DK Metcalf's playing.
Sure.
But they still had two very good receivers out there that did nothing. They have one of the best running duos in the league. Kenneth Walker is top three or four. I mean, I make an argument. He's without Christian McCaffrey around. He might be it. Like, he might be one of the best running backs in the league. The Bills just absolutely dominated them at the point of attack. So there will be games where the defense plays great and they can get you by if you're not separating. And I think that's what happened, I think, early. And they got up in a couple of those game scripts that made teams easier to defend, specifically Jacksonville and Miami. But then, like, you go up against stiffer opponents and your offense didn't have the right game in either game, and their defense... Mm-hmm. really stepped up in the second half of that Houston game, kept them in that game. You got to have something, and they just did not have anything offensively in the second half of that Houston game.
How do you feel at this point, while we're talking about the passing game, we're talking about receivers? Like, I tend to focus on Coleman and Cooper, of course, the two guys who were concerned about being able to play. And Dalton Kincaid is not a wide receiver. Of course, he's a tight end. How do you feel about how that's going? Doesn't it almost always leave? I try to be realistic with expectations. I feel like there's a skill set there that you could still be getting more out of with Kincaid. Do you think that they are doing enough to get him off?
No, I don't. But isn't it our fault a little bit? Like, it reminds me of the Ed Oliver conversation. Like, Ed Oliver coming out, who are they comparing him to? The best defensive tackle of all time.
Right.
And what they wanted to do with Dalton Kincaid was compare him to the best tight end of all time in Travis Kelce. And he's not that. But he's pretty good. He's pretty damn good. I mean, I think I saw, maybe it was Joe Marino that posted some of his stats this year.
Yeah, he's like top 10,
kind of 10, 13, yeah. 9, 7. Like, they're...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just, it wasn't maybe, he's not Travis Kelce to this offense. There's not a lot of other tight. This is all to say, if you look at Sam Laporta, huge step back. He's an afterthought in that offense right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who's really leading the way? Zach Ertz. And these weird guys that are, even like Dallas Goddard's kind of coming and having a revival season. Like, I don't know. I think
McBride's
that guys,
doing all right in
McBride's
Arizona.
McBride's doing
right.
Well, yeah. And so I just think like the guys that people really thought, I think a lot of people thought that Laporta and Kincaid were going to be tight end one, tight end two. Hasn't been the case. We've seen glimpses. I don't love the way they're using him. Like, he's like, they're force feeding him. It reminds me of what they're doing with Diggs.
Yeah,
like
I
getting screen passes.
Yeah,
the hell is that?
I like Shakir in that. Like, I like those plays to Shakir, right? Those little bubble type screens, like get him the ball at the line of scrimmage and let him make people miss. I'm not, and they do that with Kincaid too. And maybe a part of that is just to do it with someone other than Shakir, which, you know, certainly has its merit as a concept. I also don't feel like that's the best way. I'd rather see Kincaid catching the ball 10, 12 yards downfield and trying to make the guy who missed him miss a tackle and then hopefully make something bigger out of it. I think asking him to run through a bunch of dudes at the line of scrimmage is, I don't know, that doesn't sound like a great idea to me when I see that. So that's why I ask about how they're using him. You know, I mean, we've seen some moments, you know, of him down the field, but it's still not... The seam stretcher type guy, I think he's got the skill set to do it. I just still don't see them finding a way to spring him to do it, and that's frustrating. You know, maybe that's a place you really need to look here if they're going to be down wideouts going into this game, which is certainly possible with the status of both Cooper and Coleman as we work our way through the week. Again, much more on all of that coming up in about 20 minutes when Sal Capaccio joins us for the rundown. We'll spend a few minutes talking about the Bills' backfield here and Cook and Davis and Ty Johnson and how they're being used as we continue. Nate Geary's in for Mike Schoep along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Hey, it's contest time here on WGR. Be caller 5 right now. It's 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. To win yourself a pair of tickets to see Sebastian Maniscalco at KeyBank Center on Saturday, November 16th. Courtesy of Live Nation, tickets are currently on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Sebastian Maniscalco, that's the bookie.
He's a funny guy.
That is Nick Bakay's Max joint, the bookie. I don't know if you have partaken in that, but I did, and it's excellent. You know, Nick's an old friend of the show.
Sure.
Recent inductee into the Buffalo Broadcasting Hall of Fame, Nick Bakay. Anyway, Sebastian Maniscalco is the lead actor there.
Do you have to be retired for 4 years? Is that
Leah? I don't ever want to talk about this.
I'm glad that I could make you uncomfortable honestly. It's my duty, I think, as a part-time
villain. We'll get to Sal in about 10 or 15 minutes here with the full rundown. But one move, the Bills have released Zion Logue from the roster. He'd been a healthy scratch the whole time. I don't think he was active for a game yet, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm missing one somewhere. Anyway, they've got a roster spot available now, is what they've got. They signed the two defensive tackles that took some spots for guys that went to IR, with Jefferson and Jordan Phillips coming in earlier in the week. But now they've got a spot. So I don't know. We talked about Micah Hyde with Sal a little bit yesterday. I don't know. How do you feel about the need? Where's your desire at on Micah Hyde? Do you feel like this team is crying out for Micah Hyde?
I kind of don't. I think that barring injury, even without injury, the player I'm most interested in, I'm surprised I haven't seen anything about him, is Nick McLeod. Was here in Buffalo. Bills brought him in.
Right.
He was a unpopular last, he was like the 54th guy 2 years ago. He goes to New York under the Dable administration down there. He got cut right before the trade deadline. I was like, oh, Bills are going to bring that guy back. He can play safety. He can play nickel corner. He's a core special teamer. That's the guy for me. But if they have to, they could bump Cam Lewis back to safety. So they've got that in their back pocket. And I think that's probably what they're kind of leaning on, is they've got flexibility across. Cam Lewis can play outside, inside, and safety. Worst case, Ingram can play outside and inside. So they've got, flexibility. But, I don't get the conversations around the safety room. They have not been a problem.
Right.
Yeah, is there some plays where you're like, Hamlin was out of position, he over-pursued. Yeah, sure. There's a reason Mike Edwards wasn't hitting the field. And it's not because he's not a good player. It's just
he wasn't better than the guys that are playing, I suppose. Right.
He got beat out availability-wise, and he couldn't overcome what Hamlin was doing on the field.
I would tell you, I agree with that. I don't think safety's been a problem. I went into the year sort of secretly suspecting that they might get better there just because of Poyer and Hyde's age. At their peak, of course, they're my dream duo back there. But you've seen Poyer be completely and utterly exposed in Miami. It's over for him. He just does not have the foot speed to do it anymore. And Hyde, I love the guy, love the character, love the leadership. I don't know if I'd want to get a guy that, even if he's, of course, working out and staying in shape and whatever, I'm going to midstream bring him in here. He goes right on the field if you sign him, right? It's not, you're not bringing him in to cover kicks. So I think that's weird. The guy back there that I'm kind of bummed out about is the guy that got victimized for the biggest pass play of the year against him in Houston by Nico Collins, and that's Bishop. I love that draft pick. And by no means am I saying it's over, he's a bust or anything, but I was hoping by this point in the year you'd be seeing him a little bit more than at garbage time.
I will say this. I don't always love telling Sal when he's right. Sal was right about Bishop all along.
A long time.
He called it from day one when everyone talked about this is the guy. He's going to start right away. And Sal, even I was like, I don't know, Sal. They drafted him the second round. I think he's going to play. And he's like, okay, but here's what I'm going to tell you.
Right.
He's going to play special teams, and he might find some ways in there if injury or lack of play happens. But Sal was spot on about Bishop right from the start, right from the second he was drafted.
Speaking of Sal, we'll take a timeout here and get to Sal on the other side of this. If he didn't, I'm going to tell him.
Damn it.
I'll try to do better introducing our next guest than I did when I introduced Joe Ostrowski. Hi, this is fun.
Wonderful, radio. Wonderful. Afternoon. Sports show.
I can bring this up again. Anyway, we'll take a timeout here. He's Nate Gary in for Mike Shope along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and Sal Capaccio is coming up straight ahead with the lowdown from One Bills Drive today here on WGR.